You're listening to the Today Show podcast right here on News Plus Radio.
Today, provide you with in-depth news and expert analysis, tell you the whole story and the bigger picture. Bring you the news you want to know only on Today.
Welcome to Today with News and Analysis. Today keeps you informed and inspired. I'm Wu You. Remind our listeners, if you want to ask any questions about these stories or to leave a comment, you can simply follow us on Weibo. We are 今日, Today on CRI. To hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. You can also download the app of EZFM or China Plus in the App Store. Today in the studio we have Cheng Jimeng, Associate Professor of American Studies at Beijing Foreign Studies University, and Man Ling, host of A Light on Literature and Language Cafe. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And our first topic is about the population. Populations in Beijing and Shanghai both dropped in 2017. It's the first time that China's two biggest cities have seen population decline since 1978. The number of permanent residents in Beijing stood at around 21 million by the end of 2017, 22,000 less than the end of 2016. Authorities in Beijing hope to cap the population at 23 million by 2020, while Shanghai wants to keep the numbers around 25 million by 2035. Well, first of all, what are the possible reasons for the population decline in Beijing and Shanghai?
I think Beijing and Shanghai are still very attractive. Mm-hmm. So the figures are not that significant. I don't think it's going to have an impact on the real sizes of population of these two cities. Reasons, if it's no longer attracting people, it could be political, economical, and its competitiveness. As I said before, that it's still attractive, so it's not the reduction of the competitiveness of these two cities that are not luring people to them. Mm-hmm. So it must be the administrative order or the economic restructuring of these cities that have an impact on these things.
But to me, at a very macro level, I think there are several reasons. But in fact, first thing first, I think decrease in population started actually back in early 2000, and especially in sometime around 2008, when Beijing mm-hmm. actually was awarded the right to host 2000 Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. So it started with what we call the urban replanning, and that is a kind of systematic way of relocating and replanning certain part of the city. With that, a whole range, perhaps a large number of local residents, even permanent residents, relocated to distant suburbs or outside the fifth ring. Secondly, I think there's also urban renewal system. Instead of urban replanning, the urban renewal once again, in fact, maximizes a certain kind of a lot residential quarters that actually attract more what we call high-worth individuals. And thirdly, I think it's also low birth rate. Low birth rate also contribute to the decline of this very demographics in the city, especially the age, for example, in between age 20 and perhaps 50. And lastly, I think with the low-end industries, I would prefer low-end industries being relocated to mm-hmm. surrounding even provinces.
Well, Timon, you have mentioned about low birth rate. But China has lifted its one-child policy and allowed families to have two children. Why are most people not eager to embrace the new policy, as seen in less families having an additional child? What are people's main concerns?
I think it's the opposite. I think there's quite a few of people in this very demographics are giving birth to second, even third child. Mm-hmm. I know lots of friends, young friends in the army, in the government, and also in other sectors, and especially what we call the tertiary industry people. And I know several of these farmers actually working around town, and they have their third child even. And so I see an increase in terms of this very population. But once again, sometimes you could see dink families, families, for example, with two very, very kind of high-income parents, and because of various stuff that they're exposed to, for example, ideas from overseas, maybe fast work pace, and they still are very much unwilling to give birth to a child.
Quite interesting sort of phenomenon. The birth rate or the number of the second child birth is much more than the first child birth. That's the statistics shows. So that means people do not want children, still do not want children.
No.
But the people who have already had the first child, actually when after the policy is relaxed, you know, then their enthusiasm is there. So the second child birth is, the number of second child birth is much more than the first child birth. So it's the it's understandable, actually. Those who have already chosen not to have children, they stick to their kind of sort of way of life. Yes. And then those who love children, they were given the opportunities to have more. So actually, in my heart, if we're going to tackle the problem of net children's, you know, childbirth rate in the future, because the population is aging. And I actually wanted to see the country to open up the whole thing. Just you can have as many children as you want.
I think this is going to dramatic increase in terms of people living in rural countryside. And there is clearly this kind of a rural-urban divide in terms of people giving the second and the third birth.
Yeah.
I know lots of farmers actually who are very happy about this very relaxing of the birth control policy. For example, children to them means not just carrying on their family line, but also in terms of adding more labor. I think, once again, this is this points to a very, very serious issue in terms of China is going to suffer severely this very labor thing. I mean, population remains a very advantage for China's economy to take off in maybe the rest of the century.
So that means the aging society is one major issue faced by many countries, but also we need to take the different situation in rural and urban area in consideration. Talking about birth rates have dropped in many developed nations, with South Korea and Japan experiencing severely negative birth rates. Is it a good sign?
Definitely not. We need vitality in terms of the democratic sort of demographic sort of development or the picture. But it's a irreversible trend. I think the better your life is, the less desire you have to have children. Nowadays, you have so many choices. You know, your life will be interesting. You don't want the responsibilities of raising a child because it costs so much. I have been asking young people around. Sometimes I said, hey, the policy is already there. Why don't you just have another child? No, it's already too much trouble. Seems to me that the kind of the young couples are not really enjoying being a parent. Responsibilities are more than the pleasure of having a child. They are not enjoying the process. All they see is anxieties and the burdens and responsibilities. So this is not a very good one.
Our two neighbors, actually, in this part of the world, seems to adopt a very different way. I think in the UK, it's all about encouraging children, right? At this end of the things, meaning providing much more kind of a welfare system for young kids, right? As long as you're three and then you have more, you have free milk. Yeah. In Japan, I think it's all because it is a very society with very mature welfare system, and so pension system. And that means he doesn't have to rely on children to take care of the aging. China has still this kind of deeply rooted culture that you raise a child and you raise children so that you can actually prevent future disasters or the caring of the aged. And so aging society comes with the post-industrial society. And in this sense, I think, once again, if a society can provide better welfare, and that really solve all problems once for all in China, still, I think there's a problem with the social welfare system. And once again, as Peter Hessler in his book find out, that it is general sense of insecurity that prevents people from having more children.
We can see that in many countries, there are many differences in senior care, because in most of the developed countries, there are a lot of senior care centers. But in China, in the old days, we still believe that the home senior care can be one of the best options. But talking about that, and also the choices and desires from young people, is the reluctance to have children or more children a reduction of our populated world as nations become richer? Will the birth rate globally drop? Is this a key to managing our size by simply improving economies and letting people choose to have less children?
I don't think this is the intention. to improve economy so that we have less children. So the control of the sizes of Beijing and Shanghai is a different one, because Beijing and Shanghai have concentrated the best resources in this country. And it's the uneven development or unbalanced development that's the key. We don't want to see only, okay, the country have two or three or four even mega cities and the rest of the country is not that developed and the living standards are no good. If people, talents are being lured to these medium-sized cities, I think the whole country will have a much better balanced development in the future.
Simon, what's your take on this?
I think this is kind of a dilemma, but on my side, I think Beijing has to reduce the size of the population for two main reasons. I think as a cosmopolitan city or mega city, I mean, Beijing is increasingly running short of many resources such as water, even the job opportunities, land use, and
everything.
Everything basically. And so by reducing the size of the population, we can save resources. We can save water, we can save many other stuff. And so in this sense, I think the current administration's policy of downsizing this very population and focus on the pure function, this very function of the capital, being the capital city, you need to be the real culture and perhaps governmental center. If you look at Washington, D.C., for example, you don't see people wandering around out there in the city. If it is a government, for example, in Foggy Bottom, in the White House area, you don't see that many residentials. Basically, it's government for government buildings. And so in that sense, Beijing needs to change and needs to change its function. And with this change, I'm sure that there will be readjustment in terms of the composition of the population in certain neighborhood or even within the second ring and the third ring road.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the change and also the methods to realize the goal. So is the declining population a crisis? How do you view it? Or simply another factor in the wide world of varying challenges?
The reduction for the moment, this present reduction is not a crisis. And on whether it's a good thing or bad thing, we need to wait to see, because it's not a natural, how do you say, it's kind of a natural mobility of the population. Like Jimon said, it's an administrative order, policy. Whether this policy is correct or not, it has to go through the test of time. I can foresee letting the service tertiary industry people, reducing that part of the population, will definitely have a bad influence on the society itself.
Mm-hmm. And Jimon, do you view the declining population as a crisis?
I think half and half. I think mm-hmm. it is a crisis, but then once again, we can change that very crisis. Like in Chinese, we say weiji means also opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. And so in this sense, we can provide an opportunity and see an opportunity deriving from such crisis. And one way out, I think, is to continue educating the general public, making the city continuously attractive. But at the same time, I would say that right now, nannies are in short supply. That's an interesting phenomenon. But once again, I think it points us to this very opportunity. The governments can take the advantage of this very opportunity to provide much more kind of institutionalized mm-hmm. old age homes by training young people, by training college graduates, teachers' college, for example. There are tons and tons of these graduates coming over. I mean, why not just make full use of those highly trained people instead of hiring people from outside? I mean, I sometimes see kind of a shame for these people traveling so far away from home and working and here in Beijing. Whereas Beijing has already had lots of these resources.
There are traditional sort of thinking that these nursery sort of jobs, tertiary jobs, are being done with less educated people.
That's something that we need to change, I think. And it's not about simply serving people. It's mm-hmm. all about taking care of.
Actually, if you are serving people, if you serve people, that means people will be served, yes. Yeah. We should believe in community service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or in Hong Kong, they have social work. Workers.
And only time can tell whether there are lots of opportunities lie in the crisis. Mm. Moving on, there are many people making decisions whether to have the second baby or not. Here is a father. He has made up his decision of a willpower training. A Chinese father has made his 6-year-old son cycle up to 70 kilometers a day every day while carrying 7 kilograms in supplies. It allegedly aimed for willpower training. It has triggered a hot debate online since many people view it as mistreating the boy. Despite mounting criticism online, the father says to intense physical training for the past year with no major problems, and adds that, quoted, I don't care what others say. I hope this makes him into a tough person. Anyway, this is better than playing games at home. First of all, are you for or against this kind of so-called willpower training?
I'm not against willpower training. I think everybody needs willpower training. But there are, okay, I have to say that there are better ways of training or worse ways of training. Mm-hmm. I think what suits a specific child is the best way. Mm-hmm. So if this father is confident what he is doing is correct for his little child, then I choose to respect him first. And then the second, after I choose to respect him, I need to question this father. Because every parent has his own way to choose or bring up or raise a child. This should be, it's the right of a parent. The second I have to question that, is the child able to do things, for example, help mommy or daddy to clean the house a little bit, or making his own bed, or finish his own meal, or, you know, even go shopping, you know, in the community, in a safe environment, to do all the errands and chores for their parents. And to be independent, mm-hmm. you know, handling his own things. If this child proved that he can do all these kind of things and then add to this ability to do this cycling training, then I have thumb up for this father. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then if it's only the singled out training without really teaching the basic skills of living skills for the child, then I am against it.
Jimon, are you for or against it?
I'm against it. I think I'm a lazy and relaxing person. I never talk about willpower. I think power corrupts. Power corrupts. So I'm old, I'm sick, and because without that willpower. And so willpower tend to mean that, you need to conquer something. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, it's a six-year-old child conquering and testing the very limits of himself. Mm-hmm. It's really stretching the very last limit mm-hmm. of the young child's capacity or even stamina. I think it's such a brutal thing for a father to do a thing like that.
Mm-hmm. The father has actually justified himself. He said that, quoted, some people say I use my son to get public attention. I don't mind. My only hope is that my son can grow up safe and have a better mentality when he is faced with inequality in the future. Do you agree with the father? Can the training really help in this way?
You know, I believe a father and a parent's relationship is a private one. I think every child has its own way. It's a private bond. Mm-hmm. Whatever you are doing on a little, you know, life, it's between you and the little child. It's like we are taking care of a small, very dedicated plant. Mm-hmm. How much water we are watering the plant, and how much care we were given it to. It's a private thing. It's a father who are so desperately need attention. Otherwise, what's the point of showing it and exposing it? Training of various kinds is good, but it has to come after learning the abilities, as I said.
Mm-hmm. And about the plant, if we forgot to water the plant, that means we're testing its willpower.
Try it, right?
And Jimon, can the training really help in this way?
It helps. Absolutely, mm-hmm. I think it helps. There are lots of precedents.
You said you hate it.
I hate it. Yeah, I hate it. I grew up like that. I was forced to train.
And see how good you have become.
You need to be grateful to your parents.
No, see, now I end up being so sick.
See, you're blaming your parents for being
I blame the training. I blame the way of training. And it's a nationwide thing at the time. I mean, I remember clearly that my neighbor, the boy, actually living next door, and his father actually kicked him, cursed him, and scolded him into that very training. For example, he and I were forced to run, I mean, like at least 10 rounds on the sports ground within, for example, 5 minutes. And at one point, I overtook him, and his father kicked him so hard and blaming the child for being incompetent. And so the kind of willpower is a myth. in terms of through this very brutal sort of training. And you can see that even if the child was very strong in his early childhood, he can end up also being a sick adult.
Okay.
I mean, because of hard work, because of various reasons. And so in this sense, I think it is kind of extremes. I understand that there are lots of criticism in the media about this very generation growing up in this very, very prosperous environment and having great food to eat, having great school to go to, having great clothing to wear, and so now you need to make them suffer. And so lots of these fathers began to train these kids and to make them so-called talent.
This is not a single case, because during these years, the Chinese tiger moms, eagle dads, and wolf dads have gained their fame, both domestically and internationally. What do you think are the possible reasons triggering this trend?
I think these parents have strong need to be recognized. There's a huge void in their life needs to be filled. They are ambitious, definitely, from the what I observed. These people, they are so-called not so successful in their own career, or they haven't landed on or found their own interest thing to do. So they shifted their attention and energy on their children. Too much attention from parents is suffocating, actually, like too much water for a plant, you know, too much fertilizer for a plant.
Mm-hmm. And talking about someone who has experienced the whole package of this willpower training, Jimeng, how do you assess the background reason that triggered this trend?
Let me repeat this very interesting adage, which I think that I can use to describe China's situation. I think that was a very interesting adage. It's called fame and shame are natural bedfellows. Chinese fame for producing such great talent, but at the same time, China is also notorious for producing such individualistic individuals that end up in shame. For example, some of these great kids trained in those top schools. There's the Keji Dashu, and many of these top students training start from actually 6 or even much younger age, and they become eventually top scientists. But then they left China and they began to work overseas and never return. Mm-hmm. And so there's a general value kind of a problem with this sort of training for the best and the brightest. I think that once again, we need to think and reflect upon the way of educating kids. I sometimes think about applauding the father because this is kind of a courageous act. For example, he took his child back home and it's what we call some kind of homeschooling. But homeschooling can be, in a sense, very problematic. Mm-hmm. In this sense, because in a free environment, you just cannot control whatever ways to bring up a child in a very proper way. In this case, absolutely, it was very extreme. The child may collapse on the way back home with all these hard traveling. The crisis, once again, to put a nutshell, I think it's all problem, social, economic, political problem on our way to modernization. I mean, how do we adjust ourselves and how to reform and how to bring up these very innovative ways to bring up a kid?
We actually don't know the situation itself, because the little one, only 6 years old, and is the father listening to the little one? You know, it's kind of something imposing by a bigger sort of adult onto the vulnerable little. We don't talk about democracy or whatever in a family, but if the father's choices are wise, it must, you know, listen to the little one and to come up with a plan of training which suits the little one.
Yeah.
And the little one's voices should be heard. Yeah. If the little one is really enjoying it, there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, nowadays it's become a national event, a media event. I think doctors should be involved to get intervened into this very relationship.
Scientific training, right?
See, to consult the parent, to consult the child, and consult the doctors eventually. See if this training exceeds the very capacity of this very young child. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's too much. It's way too much excessiveness.
In your opinion, what are the other possible educational methods that can help with willpower training?
I think I'm also a lazy style person. The role model of a parent works the best. If you're persistent and if you're perseverant, and then resilient means after you are knocked down by life, you can still come back to function. So these are the things I think the best sort of teaching or training is the role model of a parent.
There's quite a range of things that a child can take in terms of willpower training, quote unquote. I hate the word. Let me repeat
I know, but you still have to use it.
Yeah, right. I have to use it. For a young child like this, I mean, he has considerable opportunities to join, to attend on school campus, for example. Mm-hmm. There's pretty much kind of a football team, right? Mm-hmm. Fancy team and a reading club, a drama club, English language learning club. There are multiple options for this young parent to train his child. I think the bad thing right now is about this child being trained into such a powerful individual. He might end up being an athlete, a cyclist, but then he is taken away from the crowd, from the collective, from the team. And so my biggest doubt about this way of teaching or training the kid is that he may end up being such a powerful individual with the willpower, right? And then he thought that he can survive without his very community, without the team spirit, and without this very whole thing, the people, the community around him.
That's a very good point.
For example, when you teach a little child to tie the shoestring, parents should be patient. 99% of parents are not patient. When the child is unable to tie the string properly, they will say, hey, I help you to do it, and then let's finish, let's go, you know, we're going outing, right? But parents should be patient and teach the child not to give up. This is a small example how parents can teach a child to have willpower.
So in that case, it's not the kids that need willpower training, it's the parents who needs the willpower training. You're listening to Today. Remind your listeners to hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. We'll take a quick break. Be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Zhang. Greetings from Los Angeles of the Golden State of California. Thank you today for making me part of your team. I truly enjoy the debates we had and look forward to many more in the years to come.
In-depth analysis, valuable insights, expert views, presented by an award-winning team. Today, keeping you well-informed, up-to-date, and ahead of the news.
Whoever you are, whatever you are interested in, you can always find Today covering the news you care about. Global headlines, business analysis, the latest developments in education, or the scores from the pitch. Get a deeper understanding of the news that matters most with the Today Show.
Welcome back. This is Today with News and Analysis. Today keeps you informed and inspired. I'm Wu Yo. Today in the studio, we have Teng Ji Meng, Associate Professor of American Studies at Beijing Foreign Studies University, and Man Ling, host of A Light on Literature and Language Cafe. Now let's turn to our third topic. A Chinese kindergarten dissects a pig in front of kids as part of education. In China, a founder of a kindergarten has dissected a whole pig in front of a crowd of young children as part of his education. Netizens are wondering if the demonstration is too gory for the kids. A short video has showed a man in the white robe cutting open the pig, which had been secured on a makeshift wooden rack as children are watching the butchering. The man also removed and held up the pig's innards to show the children as he explained how to dissect a swine. Well, some netizens found the scene too inappropriate and bloody, while others felt it was a learning opportunity for the young children. Which do you agree with? How does the kindergarten's display of butchering come across to you?
I think if you ask me, I would find it inappropriate and, you know, too cruel or bloody. Mm-hmm. But then if I put myself into the shoes of, you know, these local people, then I understand why they are doing such a thing. And I appreciate, as a teacher, I was trained as a teacher. The best virtual ability of a teacher is to make use of your materials to teach your child. Let me imagine, you know, these local children have seen butchering as a daily routine in their life. For example, Spring Festival and big events, marriage, you know, funeral or these things, because I know that in some remote places, and these are happening on a daily basis, right? And they know it's a natural part of their life. And at this, okay, if this is the condition, precondition, mm-hmm. that these children have seen it as something very common and ordinary, and they no longer think it's bloody, and at the same time, teacher is trying to, teach them through the whole process some anatomical knowledge. You know, after this lesson, they would see, oh, okay, before I see father, parents, grandpa, grandma butchering a pig, and now I know that this is the heart, that is the liver, and that is the kidney of a pig. That's good. The shock comes, okay, two different opinions. Some think it's an opportunity of learning. This must come from some people who are familiar with this custom. And shock sort of response comes from people like me. I grew up in the city. I'm not used to see animals being butchered. So I think a situational sort of thing is very important. And I'm not really blaming this teacher of doing that.
Dimon, how does the display of butchering come across to you?
Absolutely. I think it's a weird experience for these young kids. I mean, these kindergarten kids. I just cannot imagine that kind of situation in which the kids were put together and be exposed to this very butchering. I had a hard time actually figuring out why the teacher is teaching through this very manner. We now have so many of them, so many means, for example, computer. We can watch them on computer, right? There are lots of these kind of experiments out there being made into, for example, like textbook experience out there on the computer. And why not expose kids to a computer lab and see how these animals being kind of dissected. And so that's my question. I question the validity, the legitimacy in terms of exposing young kids to those very bloody process, such a gory process. Mm-hmm. If it is a situational thing out there familiar by these kids, I mean, that should be okay. China, once again, has a lot of these interesting butchering experiences. For example, back in the 1960s, young women who claimed that they can hold up half the sky and do the same job as men do. And then I still remember this picture of these young women being actually using such a large knife, cutting open a pig. Go online, it's out there on the picture. I teach a class on feminism, and then every single time, it's my kind of iconic picture, young Chinese women doing the same job as men do. This proves to be very, very inspiring overseas, and that's the fame part of China.
Mm-hmm, I admire that. And dissecting a swine, it's the local New Year ritual tradition in many places in China. If it is simply a local custom, then why the recent upheaval and buzz on the internet?
It's because people are shocked, like me, you know, like Timon. We are city people. I think if a kindergarten in Beijing or Shanghai,
They would never do that.
They even have a hard time to find a living pig, a swine. Mm-hmm. Where can I get one? Right. You know? So I think situational, definitely it's situational. And also it is using resources available to teach our kids. For example, when I went to the in East Shanghai, the suburban area of Shanghai, we have relatives there. When we were picking some corns, you know, and I was scared of all the little worms. Mm-hmm. But a little child of 3 years old, she's so familiar with these things. And I was like, oh my goodness, I feel ashamed. She's not scared at all. She used her fingers to pick them and then to crush them to death. Things like that. So I was thinking, you know, if teachers in rural areas, when they lack teaching materials and resources, they can still teach their children more knowledge.
For example, they don't have the computer, for example.
They don't have labs, you know, they don't have things like that. No. So a living pig will do, maybe.
It's a guinea pig. They're a guinea pig.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Talking about teaching kids, in your opinion, what else should also be added to the kindergarten curriculum?
I think kindergarten education is to prepare children. The first step into the so-called society, it's kind of a door, a step into primary school, right? So life abilities, you know, how to manage your own life is the must sort of to-do thing. And then everything beautiful in life. For example, art, music, literature, sport, you know, all these things should be added to. If you have the capacity to offer this to our children, I think, again, then you have to consider how much resources you have. So as this teacher doing the butchering, I think...
Way too advanced.
Yeah, a little bit.
Way
but
too advanced.
It's only part of it. I believe maybe they're doing other things too. For example, you can teach children to draw pictures, you know. And even though if you don't have paper, some of the places are very, very poor, remote villages. You can even draw beautiful pictures on sand, on beach. So these, I think, teach our children what is the beauty of life. It's the most important thing.
Timon, what about you?
I agree. I think whatever beautiful in life, and you have to expose kids to those stuff. And butchering is absolutely
not beautiful.
Not on my not on my syllabus.
Beautiful list.
Yeah, it's not on my beauty list. It's,
no,
yeah, flowers, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Beach visiting and gaming and drawing and all that stuff.
Now let's see if Jimo has mentioned about gaming. There's a special game that has gone viral for Chinese young people. Turn to the fourth topic. Japanese mobile game Traveling Frog has gone viral among Chinese players. In the game, players need to prepare a frog for a journey. Players harvest clover as a currency to buy props and make backpack for the frog before he goes on the journey. The frog will send postcards and bring back souvenirs for you. It has once become the most downloaded free app in the simulation game section of the Apple Store. First of all, why is this frog game so popular among the young people in China?
I think it's, to be more specific, it's amongst women. I've been asking around. You know, young men are not really doing this thing. And I discover that certain women in their mid-40s are doing the same thing. So it's just a very interesting, popular only among those, I think those who are quiet, more reserved, who do not want to play too competitive sort of games. These people. This is very popular.
Timon, what about you?
I, once again, have a hard time figuring out why the game is so popular. I think gaming, once again, like willpower training, is the opium to people.
Come on, Timon. You can't be that cynical.
I'm very cynical. I think it's a very sick sort of thing to do for either kids. For me, as an educator, I never, never encourage my students to play games. I mean, gaming to me, gaming at home, and particularly long hours, so very late at night. It is very unhealthy thing to do, first thing first. It's a very unhealthy thing to do. And secondly, I think it makes one addicted. Addictive. It is a very addictive thing to do. And once you are addicted to it, and then you will be in a very, very pathetic situation. It means that you cannot control yourself. You cannot just simply lose control. I mean, try to control, and power doesn't have to control and doesn't have to be used to control. But then once again, if it is self-discipline, I think self-discipline perhaps is important. And once again, I think the Japanese export can be very, very unhealthy. Why do we just simply look to Japan for such an interesting, such a kind of a pathetic gaming?
So you think Chinese young people should play King of Glory?
Two things stand out over in terms of China exposure to Japan is Jainan Jainu, right? This whole thing about this Jainu thing produce a very, very lazy, slacky kind of a situation in Japan, and which is why marriage rate is dropping, birth rate is dropping, because men and women stay home and play games on the computer. They simply interacting on each with each other on computer with the gaming thing.
Do you ever play?
I know, I never play.
Me too, but some people criticized me, labeled me as someone who never know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 你不会玩, you know.
Well, I play, play on the ground. I'm playing on playground. Right?
It's a problem with, you know, our problem that we no longer enjoy any sort of games that people are enjoying that much.
No, I mean, my fear is that once you are involved and then you grow addictive, like me typing, for example, I'm now translating a book, and that very typing thing, that kind of translating, the whole process makes me so very addictive. Dinner over, I mean, sit before the table and just keying words into the computer. And playing gaming could also be a very addictive game for me.
So any addiction is no good, right?
Addiction is not good at all.
But in your opinion, what kind of role does this kind of simulation game play in the lives of young people? A companion, a trend, or just a pastime?
I think it's kind of a low energy, this one. A low energy, less responsibility, rather passive sort of type of game. I call it low maintenance. You know, you can ignore it, put it aside, and after 3 days, you go and check. I wanted to test it. I downloaded it, and after 2 minutes, I canceled it. So that means it proved it's not my sort of piece of cake. Companionship is definitely the major reason why people love this. People are lonely. And this is such a comfortable sort of little frog that needs not much of your attention, but always come back to you, you know, once in a while. It goes out to travel and come back. And right. when it is back, it is doing things. It's like a cat, actually. Dog has more interaction with its owners. A cat is like, don't leave me alone. Right. You know, I'm doing things. I'm doing homework and I'm doing sort of computer games and you just need to feed me. So, but there's another very interesting discovery is why it's women. Because it's a child. It's like taking care of a child, adopting a child. Mm-hmm. I think it's the maternity love. The need to love a child and take care of kids. It's an innate...
Mother instinct.
Yes.
It appeals to the mother instinct.
Yeah, because every woman, I am a woman, we were born to have this mother instinct, and we need to express it, and we need to use it. So it's an innate and a natural quality of all females on the planet. Even an animal have this, when they matures, I mean... A female animal or female human being matures, they have this instinct to bear a child, to produce a baby. And if you suffocate, you do not do it. You do not marry. You do not have a girlfriend. No, boyfriend. You do not have a husband. But you still have this instinct. How to fulfill this one? And this game comes in. I think Japanese people are so clever.
In a way.
But actually... As Jimo mentioned, it is going to be destructive to society. The more people stay home, the less they will contribute to the society's sort of development. It's a vicious cycle because the more you seek comfort in such a relationship with a virtual frog that is your child, the less interested you're going to go out to interact with a real person. Because a real person is so complex, so difficult to handle. Some people choose not to marry because a marriage is difficult to handle. Right. You have to coexist with a person who grow up in totally different situations, environment, and try to find the common grounds and to live. So a virtual frog can, if it can, you know, bring you the companionship and to give you a feeling of being a mother, if that's enough, it's the tragedy of the society.
It is, absolutely.
Well, that vicious frog is to be blamed for the population decline in Beijing and Shanghai.
Let me say Japan, right, perhaps.
And with the development of modern technology, more people would opt to robot chat, such as Chinese Eyes, which is similar as Siri, and another Chinese mobile game that has millions of women addicted to it, since it's more or less like an online robot boyfriend for chatting. Also, the aspect in the story for the young people to raise a frog, does it reflect a certain aspect of the contemporary society? What is your assessment on this?
I think we are now enjoying too much solitude. Me, myself, I'm fine with myself, stay alone, and even with my husband, we kind of do not interfere with each other's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're handling your things, I'm doing my things. And then whenever there's a need to be together, for example, meal is ready, let's, you know, eat together. And we are fine. But again, at least I'm still living with my loved one, right? So we still have interactions of one kind or another at certain times. I'm not living all by myself. This one is, the trend is no good. I don't think it's healthy. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
I don't think it's healthy.
Well, absolutely no. I think this is also a high time that we as humans testing the very limits of our intelligence. For example, the human artificial intelligence, which are breaking into new grounds and also uncharted waters in terms of reshaping and remaking, kind of reprogramming our human life. And so it's high time that we reconsider these high-tech products and perhaps high technology in general in terms of how we cope with them, how to improve human lives, how, in a sense, make ourselves even more comfortable. And absolutely, it's something interesting as a substitute in terms sometimes to elevate human beings from bits of boredom, right? Life without meaning, life without companionship, and life without a certain long-term partner. But it's not the way out. It's not the way out. We are basically human beings because we differ from these artificial robots. I mean, we think and we feel and we censor, and we don't need someone who simply are somebody that we can conquer, we can subjugate, and we can basically see them as our servants.
Go back to the willpower thing. If it's a game, is a game. If you can just regard it, take it as a game and seek some fun in doing it, it's okay. But the obsession means that once obsession is formed, usually it's without people's consciousness. And then you lack, I think ordinary people lack the willpower to overcome this obsession. This is the danger part of all the games.
And for the long run, are you optimistic about the trend?
No.
On certain conditions, as long as you can control and exercise some discipline.
But to make it a fair talk, to talk about the other aspect of the frog journey game, I saw someone has posted an article online that says, after playing this game for a few days, I've understood the difficulties and the hardships that my parents have endured and gone through while raising me. I'm like that frog because I seldom communicate with my parents or barely showed up. A few times of showing up, they also need to prepare my backpacks or luggages, financially supporting me. And I've also sent back postcards to them while traveling abroad. I'm just like that frog, and that article has gained lots of thumbs ups and comments and has been forwarded by many people. Today, for the four topics, we can also see today's four topics in backwards. It's like a journey of understanding. Understanding the hardships of parents, though it's through a little frog, and then the founder of the kindergarten through dissecting a pig, then wolf fathers and tiger moms with their so-called willpower training, and finally, children grow up to see and explore the world by themselves. They can also choose to be parents, but suddenly they realized the first-tier cities could be less crowded than before. And that's it for this episode of Today. To remind our listeners, if you want to ask any questions about these stories or to leave a comment, you can simply follow us on Weibo. We are 今日, Today on CRI. To hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. You can also download the app of Easy FM or China Plus in the App Store. Today in the studio we have Teng Jingmeng, Associate Professor of American Studies at Beijing Foreign Studies University, and Man Ling, host of A Light on Literature and Language Cafe. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Today. With news and analysis, Today keeps you informed and inspired. I'm Wu Yo. Thank you so much for joining us.